Hello and welcome to Policy Pathways, a new podcast series focusing on the policy challenges of food, land, and water systems transformation. The project is brought to you by the CGIAR National Policies and Strategies Initiative and is produced by the International Water Management Institute. My name is Chavi Sachdev. I'm a journalist based in Mumbai, India. Today, we're talking about the National Policies and Strategies Initiative Policy Coherence Report for Colombia. Joining me today is Dr. Augusto Castro Nunez, Senior Researcher and Program Lead at Alliance of Biodiversity and the International Center for Tropical Agriculture. Augusto is also lead author on Colombia's NPS Initiative Policy Coherence Report. I'm also very pleased to welcome Professor Miguel Pena Verón, Senior Researcher at SINARA at the University of Valle in Cali, Colombia. Welcome to you both. Before we move on to talk about the report itself, we like to give our listeners a little bit of context, geographical, social, and even political, which provides some background to what we'll be discussing. So, Augusto, could you introduce Colombia for us? It's a big question.
It's a big question. Yeah, I know. Colombia is located in the northwest corner of South America. Colombia is quite active in the environmental UN Nation Conventions, UNFCCC, Biodiversity Convention, and a Convention on Land Degradation. Colombia has two oceans, has access to two oceans, the Pacific and the Caribbean, has high Andes and the Orinoquia region, and it also shares part of the Amazon region with Peru, Ecuador, Brazil, and other Latin American countries. So it's super rich in biodiversity. It's been emerging from conflict since 2015 or 16. Maybe Miguel then can tell us the exact date. But the country is kind of highly involved in this peace building process.
Yeah, I would add on top of that what just Augusto said, that Colombia has some strategic ecosystems like páramo ecosystems, which are unique of the Andean range. Those are water-producing ecosystems, and basically the whole country depends on water for those ecosystems. And in terms of the conflict, yeah, as Augusto was pointing out, I think from the 15th century when the Spanish colonization started, we started the conflict, really, but it got really, worse. Middle of the 20th century. So we've been, let's say, in 70 years of conflict, and that's creeping all up to date, you know. But we are in a big peace process now from the last government and the current governments.
Well, as with most countries, you depend on the land and the water for your economy, but also your livelihoods. And I think 16% of Colombia is involved with agriculture, which of course then means food security, land, water. So can you tell me a little bit about what Colombia's role is in South America? Because as the only South American country in the NPS study, it's meant to be representative for the region. And given its history of the conflict, as well as its very diverse geography, how is Colombia a good case study in this respect? I mean, is Brazil, which also faces policy challenges, expansion in agriculture and biodiversity loss, also in the Amazon, also a good candidate for the study?
I would say that Brazil, although a good case study, is highly studied and not necessarily representative of the Latin American region. Why? Because it's bigger, much bigger, and not necessarily share the same ecosystems that Colombia has. For instance, Colombia share with Peru, with Venezuela, with Ecuador, the Andes. And Colombia also share with Peru, Brazil, Guyana, and other Latin American countries, the Amazon part, while the Orinoquia region, which is a super high value ecosystem, is shared with Venezuela.
Oh, interesting.
Also, in terms of economics, the economy of Colombia is closer to the economy of Peru, for instance, or to the economy of Argentina, while the economy of Brazil is bigger, I would say.
That does make it a good candidate.
I would also add on top of that, that Colombia is also the most biodiverse country in terms of cultures, you see, because we have Indian I mean, original cultures, the Afro-descendant cultures as well, and all the mixed population, which is the majority of Colombian population. I think we are the country with the highest rate of mixing in South America, in terms of racial mixing. So it makes us also a very diverse biocultural country as well.
So doesn't that also mean that having a singular government approach that then takes care of all this diversity is more challenging? And given the conflict, what has been your observation about the government approach to policy strategy for food, water, and land systems up to now?
Well, I think for the first time in Colombia, we have a government who is sort of concerned with doing all the development planning of the country around water in relation to lands, you see? The usual thing has been to plant around land independent of water. To my knowledge and to my way of thinking, that's a partial sort of planning that doesn't integrate systems thinking, you see? So I think by doing planning around water, I think systems thinking can come in order to sort of capture some of the complexity we have, as we said before, in terms of social and biophysical diversity in our territories.
And when you say planning, is that in terms of which crops to grow along with where, or is there a broader approach to it?
Oh, yeah, it's a broader approach because it's not just for agricultural. It's also for urban development, for instance, you know, how to plant cities in terms of water availability and the relation with land as well. So it's for all sort of dimensions of development, really, and not just agriculture. Yeah.
Has the ceasefire affected the policy change, do you think? Is it the will of the people that brought this government in? And is that a leading question? Or is it actually a response to the climate crisis?
Go ahead, Augusto.
I would say that the fire is not ceased yet. I mean, there are some part of the country still experiencing some conflict, but the government signed a peace agreement with the main guerrilla group, which is the FARC.
Yeah.
We're still negotiating with other guerrilla groups. And in Colombia, there is also some issues with drug traffickers and coca leaf production and other conflict-related issues. In any ways, I would say, in my opinion, and based on the analysis we performed, for sure the peace agreement has influenced policies. For instance, plenty of policies have emerged after the peace agreement, and those policies can be useful for implementing and scaling sustainable practices in the land, water, and food sectors. We're still learning how to use them, but they are around, and that's super nice, actually. What is missing now is how can we integrate this food systems perspective into these policy approaches. We found in analysis is that some policies, for instance, in the environmental sector, in the biodiversity sector, are not necessarily integrating properly food and nutrition consideration, while other policies working more in the sphere of nutrition and food security are not necessarily fully integrating the environmental sector. So Colombia has advanced a lot, but still some work to do.
Interesting. So we're going to touch upon the integration of food system approaches in a second. But Miguel, please, what do you think is leading this?
Oh, yeah. No, I just completely agree with just what Augusto said right now. And you see, we have this multiplicity of policies in all sectors, but they don't necessarily talk to each other. So I think that's why policy coherence analysis and improvement is important in our country. Because I think probably the government has good intentions, you know, in getting things done. But solving a conflict of more than 70 years is not going to be easy. It's not going to be gotten by just one government. I think at least some few governments are needed to be committed with that in order to make that a reality for the country. But yeah, I think we have this misfortune, you know, having all this richness, biophysical and cultural richness, but also having all these many policies, very non-integrative and very sort of independent. And also we have the national, the regional, and the local level that do not necessarily coordinate with each other as well, you see. So quite a complex thing, you know, to tackle.
Right. Intention is not enough. You also have to get all these levels to talk to each other and also...
Exactly.
So now I think we have a good overview of the geographical and the environmental context. Let's move on to the report itself. Augusto, if I could put you on the spot, what are two key findings from your perspective as lead author. What stands out for you, given that the NPS project is really focused on this policy coherence across levels and across verticals?
We didn't analyze all the policy environment. We picked some policies, some from the water sector, specifically two from the water sector, two from the land sector, and two from the food sector. And based on this small and mainly not necessarily significant sample of the policies, we can say that there is somehow coherence and, between policies. They are they somehow integrate the same topics. Still missing some pieces, and of course, the sectoral perspectives of each of the policies is there. But a lot of opportunity for integrating a more systemic perspective. For instance, COP16 from the Convention on Biodiversity that is going to be held in Colombia, in Cali, this year. That's an opportunity for further improve the integration of policy approaches. One of these examples is that the government is calling the COP for peace with nature. That's the name of the event.
Peace with nature.
Peace for nature.
That's impressive.
Or peace with nature. I'm not sure what exactly spelling, but meaning that there is an opportunity for integrating peace-building policies with conservation policies. And when we talk about peace-building policies, for sure we are talking about food security, nutrition security, and all the drivers of conflicts related to livelihoods and poverty.
Sorry, I'm not sure I got an answer to one of the key findings from your perspective.
That's the first finding. The other finding is that it's not necessarily the case that the policies kind of set some priorities. The geographical perspective in terms of funding is not necessarily coherent. I mean, there is a geographical disconnection between priority policies and the places where the money is going or the investments are going. But that was not part of the analysis. We understood this because we analyzed all the allocation of funding for the implementation of those policies that were assessed. And we identified that probably the geographical coherence is bigger than the coherence between the topics of the policy. Yeah. So those are the two key findings of the analysis.
Something that I would add on top of that is that currently there's a rhetorical dimension of policies. I mean, those are fine, those are good. But then when you move to practice, you see the problems that Augusto was pointing out, you see. I mean, if you look at the nine, if you read, for instance, our national policy for integrated water resources management, is well thought of. I mean, it's well presented. But when you go to the territories, it's basically not working or working just partially, you see. And so I think trickling down policy from the national level to practice in the actual territories is the big challenge, you know, for institutions from the different sectors in Colombia. You know, I mean, food, environment, biodiversity, public services, you know, that's the challenge, really. And also, I will have to say that in terms of agriculture, something that we have to look at in Colombia is that we have big monocrops, big industrial agriculture in Colombia, and those are copying a good piece of land. And I'm not very sure that they are very environmentally concerned, you know, in terms of water, for instance, conservation, in terms of land use, and in terms of social equity as well. So you see, because, I mean, it's impossible to talk about all these things without taking into account the social problem as well, you know.
I would say that's important. The agricultural sector is a key driver of emissions, is a key driver of biodiversity loss, and is a key driver of conflict. Specifically, the livestock sector is connected with land grabbing, and the land grabbing is connected with the conflict scene. So when we talk about coherence of policy, we also have to understand what are the drivers of the topics we want to address. And this topic is something important for the country. And I would say it's important in all the Latin American regions and elsewhere.
But do you think this is also driven by a lack of follow through on implementation? Are the stakeholders generally unaware? Do they need more education or incentivization? Is this something you're looking at in the report?
It's difficult to change narratives, and it's difficult to change action on the ground. So studies like the one we are doing is helping not only us as the CEIR centers to understand the context, but it's also providing some elements to other institutions like WWF, promoting the integration of food policies, particularly into environmental policies. So I think still too much work to do, but we are advancing little by little.
Interesting. Miguel, do you know something about the land policies and how those also work with this implementation of policy coherence?
So land management and land use is also a big problem in terms of policy, particularly at the very local levels in terms of municipalities because of the autonomy they have. But probably something I want to bring into picture as well is that we seldom talk about this is the corruption problem as well. You know, in Colombia, we have that happens all over the world, of course, but I think in Colombia, this problem of corruption in the public sector is quite a big one, you know. And that sort of also hinders the effectiveness of policy and implementation as well, you see, because not necessarily all what is planned is done and not everything which is done is well done, you see. So, I mean, corruption plays a big part in that sort of effectiveness in bringing policy to the territories, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, we are familiar with that all over the world where intentions are then diluted and even funds, of course, are diluted. Miguel, one of the issues we discussed before was the issue of land in Colombia, because now that the conflict is dying down, or at least at bay, there's more pressure on land for housing and expanding those previously arable agricultural lands into urban development.
Yeah, I think the mechanics of this land use development is that, you know, municipalities have to come up with this municipal land use plan for different uses of the land. And of course, for big and medium-sized municipalities, urban development is a priority and not soil for agricultural production, for instance, which is the case of smaller municipalities, right? But smaller municipalities have less budgets and also more weak institutions as well for implementation. So there's an asymmetry, I would say, in terms of power of execution of policies between the big size and mid-sized municipalities versus the small sizes.
It's a global problem, right? The people with the largest voice and actually the least need gather all the resources.
Usually we focus on the high-level policies, but then those policies transcribe in a program or in a project. And sometimes projects do not necessarily have the coherence and the complete understanding of the issue. For instance, if we target livestock producers that work with the milk or dairy sector, we will probably target farmers that will not necessarily be causing deforestation. But one of the outputs of that production, of dairy production, is the calves. The calves are sold for beef production. And beef production is usually happening in the forest area. So those areas where we are targeting are not necessarily coherently designed to address the drivers of the issues we want to address.
I would like to raise a point, actually, to challenge a bit August on this one. I mean, I completely agree that livestock and also monocrops and violence, of course, because of the armed conflict, have displaced farmers from productive lands in Colombia. And that's a historical process in Colombia. Also, policies should keep an eye on that as well in order to try to restore conditions for farmers to produce good food, nutritious food.
What about the issue of food security? How do these tie in with systemic approach to sustainable food security?
You can have access to food, but not necessarily nutritious food. I will give you an example. We asked of performing an analysis, trying to identify how livestock production is connected with nutrition. We identified that at municipality scale, those municipalities with the highest number of cows are also those municipalities with a higher number of child malnutrition, meaning that probably livestock producers are selling beef and milk and with the money not necessarily buying nutritious food, or that these producers are not necessarily consuming their production. So that's something that we can address. From a purely environmental perspective, we will say, okay, let's promote silvopastoral systems so we reduce the pressure on natural resources. Then we can be successful on that, but we still keep some child malnutrition, which is a high issue, no?
So you want to deliver food and nutrition security in a way that you also then have economic, social, environmental security for the generations to come. Earlier also, we were talking about Colombia's policy approach needing to take into account its current and future international commitments to climate change. Colombia is a signee on many, many different agreements. Opponents within the country argue that it's difficult for developing countries to commit to reducing their carbon emissions because they argue that this will limit their ability to grow and develop. How do you strike a balance in your proposed solutions?
I would say Colombia is a champion for climate change mitigation and also for biodiversity conservation and many things. Colombian approach is more proactive. They see reduction of emissions as an opportunity to grow. And reduction of emissions, particularly in the agricultural, forestry, and land use sector, as an opportunity to develop and improve the sector and reduce deforestation and conserve biodiversity and deliver multiple benefits, including peace building. So they don't see their ambitious commitments to mitigate climate change as a threat.
What we need, I think, is transition, you know, a transition, let's say, from this type of economy to a greener economy. But that will need a strategy going in time, and that will encompass different government periods. And the thing is that one government doesn't speak to the next one, you see? So that is the problem between the political continuity of programs and strategies and the short goals that each government has on its own agenda.
Do you have a sense that the Colombian government is receptive to these ideas?
We have presented these ideas to a part of the Colombian government, mainly to the Ministry of Environment, actually. And we are discussing the finding of this study with the team working on biodiversity conservation, because there are great opportunities for integrating the results into the development of the new plans for biodiversity conservation, taking advantage of the COP16 happening in Colombia. We still have to talk with the Ministry of Agriculture and with other sectors to see what's their reaction.
Well, thank you. That was a fascinating conversation. Your insights, your observations, and your candor is much appreciated. To find out more about what we have coming up in the series, please subscribe to the Policy Pathways podcast. We will have a transcript of today's conversation available on our feed. The next podcast in the series will be focusing on Nigeria, and that will be hosted by my colleague, Raisa Okoye. It just remains for us to thank Dr. Augusto Castro Nunez and Dr. Miguel Pena Verón for joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
I'm Chavi Sachdev. Studio production for Policy Pathways was by Wild Dog. Music was by Mark Peter Royce. Our series producer was Alan Nickel, and production was by Louisa Chandler Edmund for the International Water Management Institute. Our program editor was Andrew Johnstone. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.